another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 311, part two of your outfield preview as we continue our positional previews for the 2026 fantasy baseball season. We'll talk ADP 31 through 60 at the outfield position, and things are a-changing, like we kind of hinted at last episode. But before we get to that, some housekeeping. You can find me on Twitter at BDNtric, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom, and my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ, Ryan Bloomfield. How we doing, my friend?
We're good, man. Just ran pure for once on the draft and hold clock. Was on the clock at the 45-46 turn in our listener league auction when the Luis Angel Acuña trade broke and Acuña was available. So I snagged him. Who knows? Don't want to victory lap it because maybe he'll do nothing. But felt good in the 45th round, especially after the previous turn. You guys gave me so much crap in the Discord about that one. Felt good to kind of get that one back in on you guys.
Well, you needed it after all the love I was getting for getting the backup catcher from Colorado. And Everyone is loving the fact that I got that and mad that I got that. And there you are with Mookie Blaylock and you needed the Luis Angel Acuña. So you've gotten the last two players to be traded. You've picked in your last two turns.
That's right. I got Mookie Blaylock after the trade. Bradley Blaylock for newer listeners to the show, but We refer to him as Mookie. Got to let you all in on these nicknames that
former
we've got
Atlanta Hawk
guys.
Great.
Yep, still alive too.
Still alive. We found out. Yes, definitely.
Scooped up Bradley Blaylock the previous turn. Got destroyed for that move, and then Acuña. Lubob was off the board. Couldn't draft him at the 45th round.
Who says that people can't be swayed by recency bias and news? Ryan is proof that he can be swayed easily.
Hey, man. Whatever. 45th round, anything goes.
Yes, it is. Anything goes, just like the Hoosiers are 16-0. What are your thoughts? We like being that college football. People know that. We'll get to baseball in a second, but the football season's over, which sucks. Like we like that better than the NFL. So that was actually, I thought, an amazing football game. That was a great title game. The refs let him go. What are your thoughts? Like Mendoza, I laughed all year because I remember watching him at Cal, and that boy put it together this year. And every time I thought he had no chance against the new team, he got her done.
Yeah, it was funny because I watched the Ducks Indiana back in October, round one. And Indiana handled them at Oregon. I was like, wow. And I just kind of, I shoot it off. I was like, Oregon probably didn't play that well, whatever. And just did not get on the Indiana train until way too late. But I don't know, man. I've never seen anything like that in college football. I'm 40 years old and following college football probably 25 years. I have never seen a turnaround like that. So congrats to the Hoosier fans, the Hoosier listeners out there. For a few more weeks, we'll refer to Red Bloom Boards as Indiana Hoosier Red for your efforts and your celebration. So awesome to see.
All I know is there's some great Cignetti gear out there right now, folks. And if I was a Hoosiers fan, and I'd be just grabbing it left and right. The latest one I saw, Ryan, is phenomenal because if you'll remember, one of his first press conferences were people like, who are you? And he said, Google me, I win. So I saw it was Cignetti, but in the Google font, and had the bar below it says, I win. It was good. It's real good. So I love Cignetti.
Home Field is one of my, I don't know if you've heard of Home Field, but they're one of my favorite apparel brands. They do all college stuff, and I've got a bunch of stuff from them. They're like RotoWear for college football, basically.
Heard of them. Interesting.
Their founders are all from Indiana, so
they're having a field day with
them. They've got some cool stuff out there. I will not be purchasing in Indiana. Sure, maybe I should. Whatever.
Maybe Why I not? Should.
I like the teams. Yeah. Whatever.
Yeah, I can respect the heck out of what they did. That's like you said. So that you don't see it ever. Like I saw someone tweeted out that this might be the second thing next to Leicester winning the Premier League a couple years ago. Like the most where did this happen? How did this happen? Thing and yeah.
I have no idea what that is, but
they were basically relegated. They got promoted and they won the whole freaking thing.
Gotcha.
It's pretty wild.
Sounds about the same then.
Yeah, it's very similar. Very similar.
Especially with having half the team being from James Madison. Part of me, as a Virginia Tech fan, JMU is 2 hours up the road. It's like, could the coaching cycles have aligned where in some alternate universe, Virginia Tech has Kurt Cignetti? That's just me being bitter and old.
It's okay. You're not alone on that. I saw some Mississippi State fans who he interviewed for them before he interviewed with Indiana, and they said,
I did not know that.
Oh, they said no.
Nice.
So there
are
people on the Twitter last night that were like fuming. Yeah, Bulldog fans going, you got to be kidding me right now.
It's tough. It's tough.
That's a tough one. Tough pill to swallow. Things I don't have to worry about because all my teams always suck. So we're good. All right. This is one of the last times, I promise.
That last we will be call.
Yeah. The literally last call. The final for listener leagues. There are, according to the sheet here that Ryan gave me, it's a different number than we talked about. We're going to go with this one.
Six spots left.
Thank you. Six spots left in the listener league. And then leagues will be assigned Friday. We'll have a special Patreon reveal for the 10 leagues because they are Ryan's allocated things. The spots are full. We can change things around a little bit. There's six spots left. If by Thursday you have not filled out the survey to let us know what leagues you are interested in, we will hand them out to the wait list of free members because right now it's all paid members. It's all like we're fortunate. We appreciate you all. You guys are coming through. Y'all want to play.
Yep.
It's awesome. We have some free Patreon members that are interested. The wait list is there. So you have until Thursday at the beginning of this recording on Thursday night. If you have not filled it out, it goes to the freebies. So just be prepared for that. That's the nicest way I could say it, the easiest way to say it.
Super stoked for the listener leagues. We've got 8 out of the 10 leagues lined up with that will be live streamed, which is nice. And schedule just kind of worked out. It's going to be 10 leagues over 14 days. It's going to be absolutely awesome. I always love this 2-week stretch. Bubba, you're going to be doing February 18th for yours on Wednesday. And then I've got the Friday night, the main event, Friday night at 9 p.m. Eastern on the 20th. Will be my auction. I'll be streaming that as well. So, yeah, tons of goodies in store. And again, sponsored by our friends at Baseball HQ. So these are $50 listener leagues. The NFBC will pay out the leagues according to the payout structure that we have set up. I don't have off the top of my head, but we can look that up. But Baseball HQ is on top of all that, giving the overall winner free registration to First Pitch Arizona and each league winner a free Baseball HQ subscription for 2027, which is awesome. And we thank Baseball HQ for that for sure.
Always cool that they do that. And the last bit of news here, if you like Baseball HQ, obviously, again, we're biased. We do like it. We work for them, write for them, I should say. Ryan basically is going to be, you know, if you follow the lineage of the Godfather, he's like, you know, sixth in line or something over there. I'm just mopping in the back. But,
You made your 2026 debut today at HQ.
Hey, I've already put two articles out this year.
Oh, that's true. You do have the Dynasty Relays.
I made my PT Tomorrow debut.
PT Tomorrow debut. Let's go with that.
I'm kidding, but they do their draft prep subscription, which gets you all the way through draft season and also gets you the first month of the year in April. So it's basically, if you look at it from now, it's like three and a half months right now if you sign up for the draft prep kit. And with this awesome promo code that they made and I had nothing to do with, I had zero impact on this. If you use promo code Bubba26, B-U-B-B-A-26, you get $10 off the draft prep subscription. So I'd highly recommend checking that out if you're new to Baseball HQ, because it gets you all the articles, all the projections, everything. Ryan can elaborate much more on this, but it's and more articles are coming out. Like he was said, my PT Tomorrow came out, other ones came out last week, and we have a special week this week. I'll let you run with.
Yeah, no, the content started to come out. The draft prep sub includes their projections and all their tools. I use Baseball HQ projections for my own sheets. So, yeah, Bubba 26. As much as it pains me to say, Bubba 26 will get you.
It's got a good ring
off
to it, man.
Yeah, it does. It does. Everyone loves Bubba. I mean, honestly, it's smart marketing to make Bubba the promo code and not me. So we're good. But the content over there started. Corbin Young just debuted Facts and Flukes this week. Matt Cederholm did Market Pulse. You just wrote your Playing Time Tomorrow column. My first Speculator 2026 column comes out on Wednesday. So pretty much full bore ahead on the content side for HQ. They're doing a bunch of BABs. Broad assessment balance sheet stuff that Ron Chandler invented a few years back. This is a Babs themed week over at Baseball HQ. So just a ton of stuff over there. And support us, support them. Bubba26. Bubba26 promo code. $10 off.
There you go. Check it all out. All right. Let's get to it now. News and notes. Ryan hinted at it out the gate. He got his Luis Angel Acuña share because about 20 minutes before, maybe about an hour ago at this point in time, 20 minutes before we hopped on the chit chat, Lou Bob, Luis Robert Jr., was traded to the New York Mets. Lou Bob's been rumored to be traded for over a year, almost 2 years now, it feels like. He goes to the Mets, who needed a outfielder. I have my Mets preview with the Guilds dropping on Wednesday. We recorded it Monday evening. We basically said at the end, the outfield is not full. Duran, Lou Bob, maybe even Stephen Kwan is going to fill that spot more often than not. Lou Bob's there. Beautiful to see. He goes for Luis Angel Acuña and Mr. Pauly, a pitcher from Harvard who was drafted last year and pitched briefly at single A. And I think there's a long way to go in that profile. But we'll start with Lou Bob, Ryan, who will slide into center field because Tyrone Taylor was not that guy. What are your thoughts here? Because over the last seven days, ADP's around 133 for Mr. Robert.
Yeah, honestly, doesn't change that much for me, for Luis Robert. I would imagine Lou Bob hits towards the bottom of the order just because the OBP is so bad and the Mets have much better on-base options near the top of the lineup. So may even take a hit in terms of lineup spot, but what that, you know, entails is a much better just overall lineup. And who knows, man? Maybe he's more motivated now. I mean, it's that classic. You get traded from the White Sox to a team that should be a contender in 2026. That's what we want for O'Neill Cruz, for example. We want that fire lit under him. So who knows? Maybe this is a rebirth for Luis Robert. But I'm not really changing. Probably not a ranking for Luis Robert. I just don't think it changes his outlook all that much. I think it's for the Mets. As a Mets fan, you've got to be thrilled for this, given the need that they had in the outfield for Luis Robert. But just fantasy-wise, honestly, I think the biggest fantasy impact is potentially Luis Angel Acuña now getting more playing time than we thought over in Chicago.
Yeah, so we'll go straight to that. And Acuña, who we both like, I had way too many shares of last year because it looked like he was going to get to play, and then it did not happen with the Mets. I've been kind of off of him because there was no room at the inn in New York. Now he goes to the White Sox, that if he goes to the outfield, there's plenty of room because they need outfield help. If they try to stick him in the infield, it's purely utility, and now we have another issue because they already have Lennon Sosa in that problem. So outfield makes sense to what you're saying. We'll have to wait on some more information, but his ADP is 611 over the last seven days. That is surely to rise. What's your thoughts on Acuña? Because I'm with you. He actually hit 4 home runs in a game today in Winter League. So
today?
It was either today or yesterday. He's like the first player to ever hit 4 in one game or something. So, wow. Yeah, he's swinging it well and just got traded to the White Sox.
Yeah, this is one where playing time could do Luis Angel Acuña a ton. Yeah, let's see where he plays, though. I would imagine if the White Sox trade Luis Robert, I don't know what other offers they had out there for Lou Bob, but I would imagine the centerpiece of a trade that they get rid of Luis Robert, I would imagine that person plays somewhere. Luis Angel Acuña has played the outfield, played 2 games at center field last year for the Mets, so who knows how good of an outfielder he could be, but the infield is kind of clogged up. So I wouldn't worry about it for now. I would just assume Luis Angel Acuña gets regular playing time. If he does, man, I mean, potential stolen base machine who puts bat on ball. So like this could be like I'm trying to throw a comp here, but like a very cheap Xavier Edwards type, maybe with a little more power. I'm not sure on the power outlook with Luis Angel Acuña. It's probably more than Xavier Edwards, but probably single digits. But that's kind of what I think of Luis Angel Acuña. And then I think he's second base eligible in NFBC leagues right now. So on top of that, you will most likely, I would think Chase Mydroth is still second base for the White Sox. I think you would get some type of additional position eligibility for Luis Angel Acuña as well. So I will certainly be moving when I update my rankings that are part of our draft kit. I would imagine I will have Luis Angel Acuña among our top 30 in at second base.
100%. Yeah, he'll move into the rankings. So he was not there before. He will be now. I want to mention this because obviously the projections have not updated to this. ATC came out today, by the way, for those keeping track at home. But they had not come out. So they're using the rates that they made their projections with for a Mets Acuna, if that makes sense. But I just wanted to do Steamer 600 to see where he'd lie.
Sure.
Even with the Mets, which you'd imagine gets a boost now in Chicago, was a .254 average with 9 homers and 30 steals. Like that's
plays. Pretty sweet. Yeah.
Yeah. That plays. So now if he gets maybe some little boost, maybe we were talking, you know, he's 13, 14, 15 home runs. It's like 30 plus steals, still hits .255. Like that's pretty solid where things are going. And that's probably, maybe I'm expecting too much from him, but nice little projection.
No, right there. So similar line. So while you were doing that, I figured I would type in on my sheet. If I give Luisano Acuña 550 plate appearances, let's just say that doesn't play every single day, but plays a good amount. Given the .244 batting average, around 30 steals, that's Luisano Acuña at like a hitter 180 right now. So that's, again, just very back napkin, bumping that playing time up to 550 PAs. But that's where Luisano Acuña would roughly shoot out to.
And right now, where his ADP is going over the last 11 draft champions drafts, he is the 357th hitter.
Yeah.
So that tells you where, like right now, just for, again, just to give people an idea, if you're jumping into drafts, the 180th hitter right now is Tommy Edman at ADP 295. So you're basically going to cut Luis Angel Acuña's ADP in half.
So should we give me the auction listener league title now, or should we hold off until end of April, maybe? What do you think?
Do you want to go over the rest of your roster, or do you want to just talk about your round 45, 46 turn?
Yeah, we'll just talk about round 45, 46.
But crickets is the way I'm going to say that one real quick. Crickets.
I haven't been autoed Ronnie Enriquez in that league yet, but don't worry. Good. There's still time.
The bright side is Acuña might be able to play middle infield when the Montgomery's in AAA, so that could actually work for you.
Yeah.
It's a good pickup. Yeah. Great. All right. Anything else on that trade?
No, I don't think so.
All right. Minnesota Twins, they signed Victor Caratini to a 2-year deal. $14 million, so decent cash. Ryan Jeffers is still the starter there. Everyone's panicking, but it definitely will cut into things. And teams like Caratini, because he's got a decent hit tool, not a ton of power. He can play first base. He can play a little outfield, but he's mainly first base DH catcher. So he'll be able to give Jeffers a breather. Jeffers probably still plays like 100 games, 120 games. I wouldn't get too worried about it, but some people are pretty hyped on it. Maybe I'm wrong, but what are your thoughts on Caratini?
Yeah, I wouldn't be too hyped on Caratini. I don't think it changes too much recently. So it's interesting with the ADP tracker, like the last 30 days, Caratini's a 426 ADP. The last four draft champions drafts, 330, 353, 358, 369. So has moved up about 50 spots since the signing. I guess it is good that, A, you know Caratini has a team now. And I agree. Like, I don't think I think Caratini's still the backup catcher, but I think he can cobble up enough plate appearances at DH and potentially first base, especially given how, like the Twins have so many injuries every single year.
Josh Bell, be nice to Josh Bell.
Yeah.
Well, we like Josh Bell. Stop.
If I'm predicting injuries, Royce Lewis and Josh Bell are probably near the top. Shit. So, honestly, Caratini, if you're going to wait on second catcher, that's, I think, a really good option now.
I still prefer him as my third if I have my choice. But like the one thing I'll say is everyone likes him. Again, when he plays, he's great. I remember talking about him in Fab last year. Pick him up. He's a great catcher too in Fab for a buck. The last couple seasons, if you look like his Fangraphs page, he's got a lot of playing time because of the injuries that have sustained in Houston between Diaz, Yordan. Like there's been openings for him there. So, yes, openings will probably come to fruition, as you mentioned, but – when you're drafting him, just be aware he needs that opening to actually be relevant in this one. All right, Ha-Sung Kim of the Braves. After I drafted him as my middle infielder in the listener auction, that was cool. Cool stuff. Ha-Sung Kim hurt his wrist. It turns out it was more a ligament than his finger. He had a surgery on the finger because he slipped on ice back home in Korea, almost as bad as a Freddie Freeman injury here. Kim's going to miss 4 to 5 months, so if you're lucky, he's back late April. We're talking maybe May-ish or June. Who knows what happens? So Kim's going to be out 4 to 5 months. They picked up Jorge Mateo, who could help Dubon and others in the infield there. Right now they're saying Dubon's back to being the shortstop till Kim comes back, Ryan, which I know makes you super happy on this one. But Kim's ADP is 252 over the last seven. He's still, the last few drafts, he's still going 235, 242. Like no one has changed anything yet. That I think will start to change, I would hope. But where are you at on this whole situation?
Yeah, tough. I mean, in draft and hold, sure, you can play the long game if the price is right for Kim. But for Fab Leagues, I don't see Kim, maybe you disagree. I don't see Kim being draftable. That's not the type of player you want to stash for 2 months in Fab Leagues when you've only got seven bets.
No, I would not draft him in a Fab League.
Yeah. No. I don't know, man. For some reason, your guy, Dubon, is getting some love because he's going to play. But like, dude, Mauricio Dubon sucks. I mean, he's terrible. 398 plate appearances last year. Dude hit 241 and had hit four barrels.
He's no awful. Ernie Clement. That's true. He's no Ernie Clement.
Oh, yeah, he's worse than Ernie Clement even.
Yep.
It's crazy.
Yep,
crazy. So, yes, in deep draft and hold, sure, but it's because Dubon qualifies everywhere, and I guess you have someone playing, but I don't know, man. Is a zero that much better or worse than Mauricio Dubon for a week? Like, you tell me. It's your guy. So, you know, defend his honor.
The research I've seen and listened to with Steve-O on my show and others, as much as accumulation seems like it's dying, you still need to accumulate. So those zeros are not going to help you at all. You got to have something out there. Now, I see where you're going with this. I'm not stupid. But you got to have something. You can't just leave it completely dead. So,
yeah.
But it is almost dead, yes. Like you have to say, it's like that gif where he's got the stick and go and do something. That's what that is. Yes.
Yeah, man.
I got you. All right. That wraps up our news segment for the day, Ryan. That means it's outfield preview part deux. 31 through 60. Let everybody know what we're looking at here before we really get going on it.
All right, yeah, here we go. So this is, outfield 31 through 60 by preseason ADP. When I say preseason, it's of course preseason, but by ADP over the last month in NFBC leagues. So this is ADP 140, which is Andy Pages, down through Colton Cowser at 248. So basically 250. And then you've also got our aggregated projections here, color-coded from Miami Hurricane Green, I don't know, to Indiana Hoosier Red for batting average, homers, and steals. And those are combined projections on a bunch of different FanGraphs public systems. So that's what we're looking at, similar formula as our last few shows. Kind of just a rough like position check. Like I said, this goes through Colton Cowser at ADP 248, so we're at 250 ADP. So in 15-team leagues, on average, the market is roughly drafting four outfielders by pick 250, and pick 250 in a 15 teamer is round 16. So just that's roughly one out of your first four picks is going to be an outfielder per the market. And granted, a lot of these guys qualify different positions, yada yada, but that's a general rule of thumb that that most teams in 15 teamers have their fourth outfielder by 250. And probably in 12s, you've got your outfield wrapped up by 250. And as we kind of talk through this group, I think that's something I support. To me, speed really drops off after really like, I think there's a cliff here at roughly at around right around pick 200, which if you're watching on YouTube is the left side of our screen, outfielders 31 through 45. I think there's a big difference between that group and then the group that follows. There is basically, there's very little speed at the end of this group. You do have Jose Caballero with 30 steals, but what else does he get you? Other potential stolen base options are Dalen Lyle, Sal Frelick, Jordan Beck. All of those guys come with different levels of risk. So for me, even creeping up to like pick 175, speed starts to really drop at outfield. We're not quite to the point yet where we're in Platoonville, but the caliber of player here is a drop off from what we've been talking about so far.
Yeah, we're real close to Platoonville. There's a couple guys on the right side of the board here in the 45 through 60 that are in Platoonville, but we're not full on, as you said. And then, yeah, the speed's gone. You still have a good amount of 20 home run guys, so power is available if you adjust accordingly. But we're definitely – we've left – clearly a while ago left the five-category guys. We're leaving the four-category guys quickly.
Yes.
And we're barely clinging on to three category guys by the end. We might be into two and a half category guys by the end. So, like, to the point of it dropping quickly. And this board is just 100 picks, like Ryan said. It's 140 to 248. So, 108 picks. I apologize. So, this is going quickly. It's not like you're going deep. We use a whole board in another position. You're talking 360 picks or something. Like, this is a small section of your draft. It is in a 15-team league. It's like 7.5 rounds or something. It's just flying through is where these guys go. And we were kind of talking before the show, and when we finished part one, we said we want like two in the first 30, two in the next 30, which is this, and if we have to, one, if not, get them all taken care of already. And we were starting to do the rough math. If 140 is here, so you have 140 picks, you're at 9 rounds into 15. For the first 9 rounds, you want two outfielders, probably two starters, a reliever. There's 5 picks. Yeah. At least one shortstop. There's 6 picks. And now it's like, okay, you have 3 picks to decide what you want to do the rest with. Do you go a second shortstop? Do you go a third outfielder? Do you take a – like, this is where it gets tricky, like really tricky. And that's where the reps, the practice, that kind of stuff goes a long ways. Building your draft backwards, the pockets we'll talk about. We'll get into all that later. But doing this and us talking about stuff beforehand, it really opened up how important it is to have a game plan, because – if you're stuck in even this world needing at least 3 to 4 people, I pray for you.
You're paddling. You're pissing into the wind, as some say.
Take you out back.
I wanted to, so before you said, I agree with everything you just said. I was going to say, I'd love to get my fourth outfielder by pick 200. I know that's an ideal goal because, like you just said, there's other positions you need to do. And this, a lot of times the math doesn't math. There's just too many needs for the number of picks that you have, especially in the 15 teamers, but also in 12s as well. So I do think ideally you have 4 outfielders by pick 200, but I do realize like you may have to dip into that 200 group. I just see a big drop off after that. So
one thing I'll say about 12s, and we've talked about it a lot in fabs, there's always outfielders you can stream in your outfield 5 and 12s. Yeah. So it's
even in 15s too, honestly.
It's like, yes, you do want to be really steady, of course, but at least in a 12, like you say in 15s also, you'd know better than I would in 15s, but in a 12, I could still live knowing like that fifth outfielder is basically just going to be a freaking churn and burn.
And that's
like,
what I think you can do, right? So if I say 4 outfielders in the top 200, then just, especially if you're in a fab league, I know we have a listener question later kind of about this, but like you can kind of leave that last outfield spot as an open spot, like not all the way to the end of your draft, but when we do our fab previews every Thursday during the season, there's seems like there are always semi-decent outfielders available for both formats. So I do think like if something has to give, you can get those 4 outfielders in the top 200 and then just fill those other positions after that. If there's a bunch of starters you like or reliever specs you want to take after that, I think you can kind of skip almost the 200 to 250. There's a few guys I like, but I think that's a reasonable approach to the position for 2026.
Yeah, I guess it just comes down. Don't force this, because forcing this position, A, is already going to put you behind elsewhere, and it might not be even close to being worth it. So just something to think about again with the game planning, which we'll keep you up to date on through all of draft season. Any other thoughts before we start getting into the pockets here on the draft board?
Let's get into some pockets.
All right. I love getting into some pockets. As we did last time, pockets of 5, we kind of just give our thoughts real quickly on each one for 31 through 60. Again, we'll have part 3 for you on Thursday evening, 61 till the end of what we want to discuss. We'll start here, 31 through 35, ADP 140 through 159. It's about a round and a half almost of picks. Andy Páez, Kyle Stowers, Jacob Marcy, teammates, Brandon Nimmo, the new Ranger, and Taylor Ward, the new Oriole. So interesting profiles here. Nah, only one speed guy technically in this range. That's what you're going to start seeing. So how do you attack this section of the draft, Ryan?
Yeah, I mean, I'll just go out of my favorite target and then we'll talk about it. But to the surprise of many, it's Jacob Marcy. It's the youngest out of this group. I think Jacob Marcy is one of the best buys. You are making some weird faces at me, man.
I'm just surprised by you. I'm not against it. I'm surprised.
One of my favorite buys at the position as a whole, honestly, given where Jacob Marcy's going. And yes, he's younger. Yes, there's the track record is not there. This is 234 career plate appearances in the majors. But this is also a time in a draft where I know boring is beautiful, and that's how I draft. I draft all these olds that are predictable, boring, yada, yada. That's really like a first 10-round thing type of deal for me. Once you get in these double-digit rounds, little bit more apt to take my shots. And I don't even know if Jacob Marcy is like a shot to take outside of the limited track record. Like, I think this guy could run absolutely wild for Miami. He's got some power. I mean, it's 8% barrel rate last season, 5 home runs in those 234 plate appearances, and he makes contact. He's been above average strikeout rate, or better than average, I should say, strikeout rate in the minors at every level, 20.5% last year and hit 292. I don't think Jacob Marcy hits 292 again, but this projection of 229 for Jacob Marcy, I think I would easily take the over. So I think you're getting a potentially elite stolen base source, and he's probably fine in batting average and not going to hurt you that much in power. And the playing time is going to be there, I think, most importantly, on Miami. So I think last thing I'll just mention, look at the in-season gains for Jacob Marcy. Look at kind of the rolling strikeout graph for Marcy. Just strikeout rate continually went down as the season went on, as he continued to see MLB pitching. So Jacob Marcy, I think, is a freaking awesome buy at the price.
Yeah, no, he was awesome last year when he came up. I remember Fab, he was great. DFS, loved everything about him. We've heard comps. People say, could he be the next PCA with that speed and the hit tool? Time will tell. I'm going to be really annoyed with this now that I'm starting to play around with it. You look at the projections and they kind of, they don't have him for a full season, which again is silly to me, but they should. But so that's why I go to the Steamer 600 again. 14 homers, 37 steals. I hit in 232. That is really good. Really good. If you just look at, like, say, what the Bad X has right now, they have him for 13 and 23. ATC has 12 and 33. Steamer 12 and 33. 232. It's a lot like Luis Angel Acuña. So there's a lot to like on both sides of it. So I'm with you on Marcy. I think there's a lot there. If he can hit for average, I think the rest of it plays itself out just fine. Because playing time, there's zero reason why he should not play pretty much every single day for the Miami Marlins.
And the only other 30 base plus projected stolen base guys on this entire list is Chandler Simpson and Jose Caballero, which are true
pass and pass
rabbits. Jacob Marcy is not a rabbit.
Agreed. All right. Now, see, you surprised me. I'm about to surprise you, I think. And because I like a lot of these guys, but the guy I've been kind of focused on this range is Brandon Nimmo. At ADP 153. See, this is a guy I like because I'm really starting to embrace the consistency thing. I don't know if it's the me trying to switch to an auction brain or what it is, but a guy like Nimmo, I like a lot. We've seen the last 2 years, last 3 years, 23 to 25 home runs. Last 2 years, 13 and 15 stolen bases. He hit 262 last year. He's usually hit for a really good average outside of, like, 24 was a rough year average wise for him, but power's been consistent. He's been running of late. The average is really good. I think the average projections are too low for what he usually does. If he can give me 20 plus homers, I think 10 plus steals is good. Maybe he gives you even more, kind of what Texas likes to do. They didn't run a ton last year, so something to keep in mind on that one. But I think you can still get 10 steals with Nimmo. He's at the top of the order. They still have a decent lineup at the top half, at least. So runs should be there aplenty. Like, I just think he's one of the few, if he can get you 80 to 100 runs score to get you, let's say, before I speak too far out of school, he's been getting over 90 RBIs the last two seasons. Like, if this guy can go and give you that 25, even 80, 80, 10, hitting 260, there ain't a whole lot of that. That's basically 4 to 5 categories power, like, across the board there. Not a lot of that left. So it's a really, really good floor, I think, with Nimmo. Yeah, there's kind of injury concerns, I guess, with him, but he's kind of played through them more than anything the last few years, so I kind of got over that. But it's just a steady, consistent floor with actual upside that we've seen him go to from time to time.
I'm on board with that. It's a nice group of five.
I don't mind any of them.
Right. I don't really mind many of them. Stowers is probably my least. Sorry, Dave Petrozello. Stowers is probably my least favorite, but probably has the most power upside of any of this crew. Taylor Ward, I think, is a really nice buy because he's projected for the most home runs out of this entire board while hitting. Still 245, a few bags thrown in there, like, not going to hurt you elsewhere. Andy Pahez is fine as well. Seems like that's a little bit of a postseason dip discount potentially for Andy Pahez going at 140. So I do like this group quite a bit.
Yep, for sure. All right, 36 through 40, the Law Dog, Britton Doyle, very similar things there. Dylan Cruz, Stephen Kwan, Chandler Simpson. There's two guys I like pretty good. Two guys I can discuss. One guy I can just go to AAA now and get it over with. What do you like in this range?
I imagine that last one you were referring to is Chandler Simpson. I guess we'll get to him. My favorite's Brenton Doyle of this group. But again, other good options. If you believe in Dylan Cruz in the year 2/3, you like that. Michael Cecchini says, unless you think Jacob Marcy hits over 250, he'd rather have Dylan Cruz or Brenton Doyle around plus later. I would respond to that. Why not both? Again, this is why I really like this range. I think with Brenton Doyle, who's projected for 250 with 20 homers and 22 steals, 2020 player with a batting average, that's not going to hurt you. We've talked about Doyle a good amount on this show and just how the first half was just a disaster for him personally, but also just on the field luck-wise was just not great. Pretty much snapped back to the Brenton Doyle that we saw in 2024 in the second half. So Brenton Doyle is another one of my favorite buys on this group. I won't steal all your thunder because I like Stephen Kwan too. He's the cover boy of our show art for this one. Good group.
Yeah, really good group. Doyle would have been my pick also. Like, we've talked about him plenty. I think we're both on the same page there. It's probably a broken record at this point, but I love everything about him. And there's actually rumors recently of trading him to, I think the Mets were in the mix there, and then they got Lubob, because that would have been an interesting move for Doyle as well to just go over there. And
I'd rather see him in Coors, honestly.
So would I, but like, get him in that lineup, though, that context there would be pretty sweet. Yeah, I like Doyle. Like, they haven't projected for 2022, even after the bad year. I think we know why it was bad. He showcased like everything he said. Like, I love Brenton Doyle. Zero qualms. I think 165 could end up being a heck of a price when we're all done talking about Brenton Doyle if he does bounce back the way we think he will. I'm going to go Law Dog, though, because I'll let you have your fun with Stephen Kwan and the others. We can talk about it in a minute. But just what I want to bring up with Lawrence Butler, because it's kind of a good and a bad with what we got here. Like, is playing time there, yes, or is he platooning? Because that has been discussed. But I think the playing time is there for a couple reasons. Like, I've got my A's, I'm recording my A's show this week, so curious to see how that one gets discussed. But from talking with other people about the Law Dog, it shows him platooning on roster resource. But Colby Thomas is his platoon partner, does crush lefties, that's fine. But the Law Dog was dealing with a knee injury last year, had knee surgery this offseason. He was on, I believe it was that podcast with, the broadcaster for the A's with the long beard and everything. I was totally
Dallas blanked. Braden.
Dallas Braden, thank you. They talked a lot about it, and Braden knows him well from watching him. And there's a lot of psyche things involved there, and maybe there's a lot to do with the knee. We'll give him a grain of salt on that. What I like about this has a lot of Michael Harris vibes to me. Like, Michael Harris, yes, hits for a great average. We saw him, Law Dog, hit 262 2 years ago, 2218. Last year, he hit 234. So, like, if we expect him to be a 250, 260 hitter, he had his drop off, like we see Harris from like 300 to 270. But in the end, it was still 21-22. Like, it wasn't like he completely crushed you. And that's where I was trying to like say there's good and bad when we look at this. Now, if you want to go glass half full, this is a guy we were drafting, round 5-6 last year, because we thought 30-30 is on the table. Well, what if he just reverts back to hitting 250 or 260 again? And he does that, then we probably have a 25-25-30-30 guy still if he does that. So that's where I'm trying to go. Like, at this point in the draft, if you're still looking for that big boom, the Law Dog might actually have it. I think it's the playing time's the biggest question, because at worst, I think you're getting a poor man's Randy Rosarena. That's what you're getting. And if not, he could be better than that. And so that's where I've slowly started to be like, okay, this is like, that's why I like how Butler and Doyle are right next to each other. To me, they both could have similar outcomes if they both hit like their 80th percentile. And I'm very excited about that.
Yeah. I don't know if you're selling me or not. I just, for some reason, I can't with Lawrence Butler.
It was so bad last year at times. It was really bad.
But to your point, it was, but to be so bad, but you still go 2020 with 234 batting average. Granted, Lawrence Butler needed 630 plate appearances to get there. So, like, that's kind of my thing. And I don't know. I mean, he only played half the time against lefties. Like, I think the lefty platoon thing is real. So there is a playing time cap there. But I don't know. I don't hate it.
Can I ask you something?
What?
641 plate appearances, 2020 hit 249. Are you still drafting Michael Harris around pick 100?
Well, you like Harris more than I do this year.
I'm just saying, so. if the argument you just gave, and I'm just trying to give the listeners something to
yeah,
play
yeah,
with.
Yeah.
Like the argument you just gave, and I know we both liked Harris on the last show. I probably liked him more than you did, but we both liked him. So can we just – I'm trying to just talk
about it. No, it's fair. It's a 60-pick gap between mm-hmm. Harris and Butler.
Yeah.
I think that's fair. I actually think that's fair. This is a tough one for me. I don't really know what to do. You're making good points on Lawrence, but I'm not going to say I'm not used to you making good points. I didn't mean it to come out that way. But you are getting the wheels turning up here, which for
at least something to think about.
Like 10 p.m. at night, that's pretty damn good.
Well, at worst, like I know everyone, we're probably starting, like at least me, I'm guilty of it, talking auction stuff because I just love it so much now. It's at least he should be interesting to you in an auction if he starts coming in, like you see the bidding lower than it should be. Like you might not be automatically out like you probably thought you were. Let's put it that way. And so that's something to think about with the Law Dog. So that's why I wanted to bring him up in this section, because most of the time when we talk about him in this preseason, like we did the outfield review, we were not excited. And yeah.
And why do we both love Brenton Doyle when it's basically the same projection at the same price for Lawrence Butler?
Same thing. And probably even a better ballpark than Cooler, I'd say, it's safe to say. And like, look at the Law Dog right now. I'm looking at the ADP tracker. So it's been 166 over the last 7 days. Last three drafts, though, 179, 169, 204. At 204, that is ridiculous.
Yeah, that's not bad. That's not bad. I don't know, man. I'm leaving this. Usually I leave these previews with more clarity. Now I'm more confused than ever. So I'm sure the listeners, probably not what you guys want to hear, but
well, they probably do, because usually we agree on everything, so it's at least we talk something out.
That's true. No, the Michael Harris point is a very good one. The cheap, the poor man's Randy Arozarena point is a very good one. If you're in on both those guys, you've got a batting average cushion, you need power or speed. I can see Butler. It's just I'm taking Brenton Doyle every time instead, though. That's the problem, is they're right next to each other.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. Really. I don't disagree either. But I guess the biggest point I'm trying to get people is don't just walk past Lawrence Butler.
I know. I tried to walk past him. You pulled me back. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So what do you want to talk about with Mr. Kwan? I know you like him quite a bit.
Yeah, I don't want to belabor the point. Well, I guess our crossover pod with Rob D was a Patreon bonus, so not everyone heard that. But Stephen Kwan pops on these pulled barrel leaderboards.
He'll be in an article coming soon. Yes.
He, I think, was tops on that board as well. But just someone who I don't think the projections are capturing the actual power that Stephen Kwan has, or I guess how efficient he is with his lack of power, I guess is a better way to say it. Stephen Kwan projected for .272 batting average, 18 steals, which is great, but only 8 home runs. I think Stephen Kwan, given how efficient he is with pulling the ball, pulling his barrels, it's not just a one-year thing. This is Stephen Kwan's approach. I think you're getting someone who, if you need batting average at pick 168, is going to give you batting average and a ton of plate appearances at that good batting average. And I don't think Stephen Kwan's going to cost you that much in power. Certainly I'm taking the over on this 8 home run total that's average from Fangraphs. And who knows, maybe you get more than 20 bags as well. So Stephen Kwan, I think, is a great pick, because I just, it's easy to get behind in batting average, but then, and it's so tempting to take like a Luis Arias or Jacob Wilson or something. And I just, that's not the way I draft. I want at least some contributions in the other categories. And I think Stephen Kwan's going to give you that yet again.
Yeah, no, it's not a flashy profile, but it's a very strong batting average, as you mentioned, which results in runs, probably more power. Everything you said, it's not flashy. So like you got all these 2020 guys hanging out right above him, and that kind of gets things, maybe overshadows him. But that batting average, you don't find a lot of that as you get deeper into drafts, especially look at this board. It's one of the last ones, because I just don't even look at Chandler Simpson. Like, so literally, that's me. I said, I don't. I didn't say don't. I said, I don't. So Stephen Kwan's got the best batting average on this board. And that says a lot.
Yeah. No, that's a good way to, honestly, it's a good way to look at it, because if Chandler Simpson's off your board, he's pretty much off mine. We have a listener question on Simpson, so we'll talk about him at the end. But I don't know. Just real quick, what's your thoughts on Dylan Cruz?
That's where I was going real quick. Yeah, I got him queued up since I talked to Lauren Auerbach today doing the Nats show. Like if you, again, you steamer 600 him, that's a Ben's been got me hooked on that. He's 2025. Like he's that good. He was playing hurt last year. One of the biggest takeaways from Lauren, I can't wait till you guys listen to, they've redone the whole like scouting department, the new, I think it's GM, everything. And they're all going like they brought, it's a whole analytic team that came in. And a lot of these young guys hit the ball on the ground a ton. We know James Wood, Dylan Cruz, just as guilty. And they're working on elevating the baseball. It's like a prime thing they've talked about. So I'm not saying it's going to happen, but don't be surprised if it happens type thing. So Cruz is interesting in that regard. He was banged up last year as well. He still went 10-17, hit 208 in 85 games. So like the average, he's usually in the minors, 270 above. I don't mind him either. Like he's a great fallback. If you miss on Marcy, Law Dog, Doyle, and you still want a 2020 guy, I think Cruz is right there as well.
So, and if you're drafting for ceiling, I would argue Dylan Cruz has the highest ceiling of any outfielder we've talked about in this episode thus far. That's fair. We forget that this is still an age 24 player who was pretty much a consensus top five prospect and has shown that he can do it in the majors. Like you said, banged up last year. So if we sound a little like repetitive on how we love all these guys, it goes back to what I was saying at the top. It's just I would love to get two of these outfielders from like pick 140 to 200. I just think it's a really fruitful spot at the position, and going through this list again so far, it's kind of bearing that out.
And I promise you, we're not going to love most of the rest of the board.
No, so. Good point. Yes. Side of this board is pretty brutal. So we will.
It's going to go a lot quicker, I think.
We will get cynical quickly.
Yes. Yeah, I'm good at that. 41 through 45 as we wrap up the left side of the board. ADP 175 through 199. It's basically one round. Here you go. Alec Burleson, Ian Happ, Jerkson Profar, Jason Dominguez, Brian Reynolds. There's two guys I really target in this range. There's guys I don't mind. Where are you at here? Because I know this is the lowest your favorite player's ever been drafted since I think I knew you.
Brian Reynolds?
Yes.
Yeah, man. Of course I'm back in on Brian Reynolds. Pick 200.
Yeah.
I mean, really just removing Brian Reynolds' name from this. Anytime you've got someone who's still just age 31, so he's not, you know, he's not super old. And just law of averages and overweighting and recency bias, overweighting last year, like in general, you want to buy these assets when they are at an all-time low price. And Brian Reynolds is at an all-time low price. I don't see why Brian Reynolds can't snap right back to the guy that he's been every year since COVID. 21 through 24 has consistently been over a $20 player, 24 home runs, flirting with double digit steals and hitting like 260, 270 every season. I think that's an absolute smash at pick 200. So I love Brian Reynolds. And then I also love Jurickson Profar. I don't know if you're a big Profar guy. If so, I will let you the case for Profar. But
run with him. I'll just add on to it and talk about somebody else. So go for Profar. I would probably agree with everything you have to say on this one.
I mean, I just think it's someone that's super, super productive, like came back last year from the suspension and was completely fine. Monster August, like plate skills are there. 5K. This is kind of like a different position, but same team. It's kind of like getting Ozzie Albies at pick 180. I think the Braves lineup is always a conundrum. We can say that the Braves lineup will be better every single year, and we've been wrong, but there's just a lot of talent in that Braves lineup. I think, like, why can't Jurickson Profar go right back to the 2024 version that we saw in San Diego, where he hit 24 homers, 10 steals, and hit 280? Like, I don't see why Profar cannot do that, because he obviously showed post-PED suspension that he's still really good. And so that's all I needed to see from Profar.
Yeah, I agree. There's a lot to like with Profar. I think the projections are quite low on him. Like you said, after the PEDs, things were great, and he still had a pretty strong overall season, just with half a season, essentially. So, yeah, I'm fully on board with that. Heading towards the top of that Braves order, like if Acuna leads off and then you have Profar sitting right, like, that's a beautiful place to be with Olsen and Riley and come. Like, there's a lot to like there. But Jerickson Profar. The other guy I like is Ian Happ. Like, this is epitome of boring is beautiful. Like it's kind of like the Nimmo thoughts for me is I can draft Ian Happ and pretty much, you know, use the team tracker and trust what I put in is pretty close to what's going to happen, because that's just what he does now. That's like, for a while we used to ask, like, is it power, is it speed, is it average, like what's he doing? Now we've kind of figured it out. Now it's like 20 to 25 home runs. Didn't steal last year, but the Cubs didn't do a ton. Like, maybe he steals double digit bags. He's gonna hit like 245 to 250. He's gonna get you 85 90 runs, 85 90 RBIs. That's who he is, and that is very solid at ADP 180. Like, as your fourth outfielder, if you're aggressive, that is a phenomenal fourth outfielder. You can't ask for much more than that. It is boring as all get up, but in your roto format, by the end of the season, you will take that every single time. And I've learned to appreciate him more and more every season. And it feels like this ADP is lower than usual, kind of like Reynolds dropped as well. Like, 180 feels a little low for Ian Happ.
Yeah, and probably, and well, definitely shouldn't be. Big coffee guy too, Ian Happ. Got to like that.
I love me some coffee, that's for sure, yes.
Definitely out on Jason Dominguez at the price. I think until the Yankees show they believe in Jason Dominguez, I don't think fantasy managers should be leave in Jason Dominguez, mostly because it's just a playing time thing. Like, it's not really hating on Jason Dominguez. It's just, I don't see the Yankees all of a sudden Boone wakes up and wants to play Jason Dominguez.
Yep. Agreed. I love the skills of Jason Dominguez, but I don't think Boone wants to play him full time, especially versus lefties. So
yeah,
I just, like, we haven't hit Platoonsville, but he's part of Platoonsville, unfortunately. And yep. He's like, yeah, I'm not going to wait for it. Yes,
with the ceiling, a platoon's will with the ceiling, but you're paying for a lot of that ceiling. So
you need a couple of injuries to free that one up, unfortunately.
Yeah, one of the few I'm out on. But I mean, so far, to put a recap, we've talked about 15 outfielders in this range, and between both of us, I would argue there are legit, not only players we're fine with, like legit targets, like 11 or 12 out of these 15. Again, it's just, I just, when you're going through and trying to map out your strategy, where you like certain spots and certain guys, like, this is all showing up rosy for me at outfield.
Completely agree. Well, there's red on this side. Not sure it's rosy red. It's more like Indiana Hoosier red. Let's get 46 through 50 here. We have ADP 201 through 210, so 9 picks. Dalton Varsho, Daylen Lyle, Sal Frelick, Addison Barger, and Mike Trout. There's one player I really like, and a couple I'm like, yeah, I could if I had to. What do you think of this range?
I don't know. That's where I'm going to get salty, just because like Dalton Varsho looks good for the power speed, but it's, and I don't know if you've experienced this in drafts. There are so many, like, in these middle to late rounds, so many pure batting average killers that, like, you can't take too many Dalton Varshos. It's tempting to do it. It's tempting to do it, but like, you take three or four of these Dalton Varshos and your batting average, and thus a lot of the counting stats associated with those batting averages are very tough. So not in on Varsho. Mike Trout's just tough. Like, I mean, we all know Mike Trout. I don't need to go into detail there, but like, on top of the injury risk, it's also kind of like a batting average killer, which is just weird to say for Mike Trout. So I don't know, man. Is Lyle or Frelick one of your two targets? You alluded to one guy that you like. I don't know. You'd have to sell me on Lyle or Frelick.
Yeah, it's Daylen Lyle for me. It's still buying the skills we saw in the second half last season. Really, he was a great fab pickup. 9 homers, 8 steals at .299 in 91 games. Never been the massive power guy, so maybe you're shooting for 10 to 15, if things go right, you get 15, but there's been tons of speed throughout the minor. He's always been a batting average source throughout the season. We saw gains in the swing and miss as the season went along as well, which was very strong with Daylen Lyle. I was just surprised by his ADP. I thought with what we saw last year, it would go higher, because, like, if you do the lazy math, if he had 9-8 in 91 games, you're shooting for 15, 23, 24. Like, that's a player we talked about a couple pockets ago, potentially. Again, lazy math on that one, but I think the skills are there, because we're also, once again, this is a Nats thing for sure. We're talking about a kid that's going to be 23 this year, super young as well. It's a trend on this team. He's going to hit towards the top of the order, which is big. There's just a lot to like for me with Daylen Lyle. Like, there was rumors he could platoon. Like, 2 days ago, he was platooning on roster resource. He's not platooning at this point in time on roster resource, because that just seems silly.
That's what I was going to ask. Did Lauren, what did Lauren think about the playing time outlook for
Daylen Lyle? She says she'd be shocked that Lyle, like, the way roster resource has, I just went to the wrong page, has Wood, Abrams, Lyle, Cruz, even Garcia, like, the top five she doesn't see how that changes. Like, even Garcia might platoon versus lefties, but we saw 140 plus games both, like, the last two seasons. You should still get at least 140, and it's, we'll get to him some other time. We already talked about him. His ADP is juicy this year. So there's a lot to like with Washington and the youth movement towards the top of that order, and Dalen Lyle's one of them for me, because more importantly, the reason I like him here, and I'll stop after this, after you go farther down this board, it gets even worse. Like, Lyle is one of the final, like, Lyle's one of, like, the final, if he hits cleanup, like, he could be an 80-80 guy with, let's say he gets, like, 13 homers and 20 steals hitting 270 or something. Like, that's a very solid line as your fourth or fifth outfielder.
Yeah, at least five category potential, which you can't really say for. As you were talking, I was kind of comparing Lyle with Frelick, just because they're next to each other on the board. Lyle pops a lot more to me. Yes. Frelick, there's who knows how healthy Milwaukee's outfield will be again in 2026, but there is competition for playing time out there with Sal Frelick, and I just don't believe he can hit 12 home runs again. Baseball Forecaster, we've got an expected home run metric based on StatCast, and that was just 6 home runs, a 3% barrel rate for Sal Frelick. Like, there's a chance there's no pop here, and on top of that, just feel like Frelick compiled to the max last year at 590 plate appearances, so don't like that. I'm with you. Much rather would take Dalen Lyle if I had to at this point.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot. I was like, Frelick, I just can't figure out. I just decided that's where my stubbornness moves along, and I'll take my chances elsewhere. So I got nothing else here. Like, you mentioned Varsho. If you build accordingly and have, like, one of him, that works, but that's about all you can do there, because you got Santander later, but he doesn't run. They're like the same player, but one runs and one doesn't. So that's the problem. All right, let's go 51 through 55 here. 218 to 228, so 10 picks once again. Elliot Ramos, Jose Caballero, Ramon Laureano, Kerry Carpenter, and your boy Jack Cags, who out of this whole sheet might be the biggest boom or bust, like, let's go for it play on the entire sheet.
Nah, man. It's just boom. It's just boom.
I hope so, yeah.
I think the projections are gonna hate Jack Caglione, because dude was legitimately awful, at least with the surface stats last year. It's hard to believe Jack Cags was this unlucky. Like, 172 BABIP. Like, that is, you just look at, I mean, two of the biggest hitting stats that I look at, I get asked this all the time, is like, what do you kind of use for if you're evaluating hitters, if you just have a couple metrics? Strikeout rate, how often you put the ball in play, and barrel rate, how often do you hit it hard? Jack Cags is completely fine in both. 22% K rate, which is slightly better than league average, and a 12% barrel rate. The power is there. I think Jack Cags is, yes, there's bust potential, I guess, just because, yeah, last year did happen, but, you tack on the prospect pedigree, the age, Jack Cags is the one I'm going for it at 230 with an honorable mention to your guy, Elliot Ramos, who's a little bit more safe than Jack Cags, but I think Caglione is going boom, not bust this year at 228. Let's do that.
Yeah, and I want to mention something with Cags that, because I agree, there's a lot of boom potential. He's working out with Vinny P this offseason. That doesn't suck. You know, my thoughts on Vinny P. Vinny P's even made the joke. That's why I love following him on Twitter. He's all, like, there's a picture. He's all, yeah, kid can hit. Just sucks that I'm helping my replacement get better. It's pretty good. But over the last 7 days, his ADP's dropped to 222. If you look at his recent drafts, 244. 193, 194, 218. So there's a run there where he was going ahead of ADP. So he's going to start moving, I'm pretty sure. So as Kevin Hasting in the chat here says, lots of Cags going boom in 2026. So, yeah, I don't hate it. You mentioned Elliot Ramos. I like him a ton. Obviously, we've discussed him. Last year, he wasn't aggressive. The year before, he was. Like, he's got to figure out who he is. He might never be that 30 home run guy, but I think he could be a 25 homer, maybe steal 10. Hit for average. The question I have for you, and I was going to bring it up a second ago, but I was waiting until we got to Elliot Ramos. So you like to draft off of projections a lot. Nothing wrong with that at all. So does Ben. A lot of people do. So the reason we have projections here, that's why I'm asking the question. We both like Jurickson and Profar. Elliot's got better projections. You like Brian Reynolds. Elliot has better, or at least similar projection. Elliot's going 20 picks later than both of them. Thoughts?
Yeah, I like the park, the lineup, and I'm just taking the over on Profar's projection. Like I think Profar's better than the 18 homers, 9 steals, .248 batting average that we're showing here, and I think the counting stats will be better than Elliot Ramos. Okay. But Elliot Ramos is fine, and honestly, 20 picks isn't that much of a, especially we're starting to get later in the draft. That's really not much of a difference at all.
All right, last one I want to mention here is Ramon Laureano. I'm still I'm still a hardcore. Like last year, again, 132 games, most of his career. So we got to know that there's going to be concerns about health. He'll be 31 this year, but right now he's penciled in the middle of that Padres lineup. Don't know how that changes. The .281, 24 and 7 last year, like when healthy, we've seen him double digit steals at times. We've seen the pops legit. Middle of the order, the run production will be there. Like if you're willing to take the injury risk with Laureano at 226, this is another one of those last 4 to 5 category guys I think you can see in this draft, like in the outfield. Like I'm a fan what he's doing. You just got to really understand the risk involved in this.
Yeah, Ramon Laureano, for as much as we were on him last year when he just started playing with Baltimore and the Fab shows, we kept pounding the Ramon Laureano drum. I don't know what to do with this dude because, like, yes, last year happened, and it's legit. Dude is also 32 years old, and you look at the previous 4 seasons and just kind of didn't do anything other than get hurt. And so, like, is this a late career renaissance for Ramon Laureano? If it is, this is an excellent buy at pick 226. I think there's also risk Ramon Laureano goes back to being Ramon Laureano and is injured and ineffective again. If you look at the
broad, then you can drop him, which is nice.
Then you can drop him, which is nice, but you still, this is a valuable pick, 226. This isn't just, you know, drop him. Oh, well, this is somewhat valuable territory still.
Yeah, that's true.
So I don't know. I mean, I'm not shading Laureano. I just, it's one of the toughest types of profiles. These older guys who just suddenly kind of go off in an age 32, 33 season, track record's not there. It's like, what's the, if you're playing the recency bias card, it's just a lot could happen with Ramon Laureano.
Yep. No, that's totally fair. I'm not going all in on him, but I definitely have a couple shares of Mr. Laureano, especially in DCs. If you're doing DCs, like I'm a big fan, you have depth at the position. I'll take my chances. But in a fab league, I get your concerns for sure.
Yeah.
All right. 56th through 60. It's 18 picks, 230 to 248. Willier, and we are entering Platoonsville, folks. Willier Abreu, who's maybe not a platoon anymore. We'll see. Jordan Beck, Adelis Garcia in Philadelphia, Anthony Santander, and Colton Cowser. So technically, I guess we're not in Platoonsville, but a lot of these guys have been platooned before.
Yeah, Willier's my favorite of the bunch. I just think the playing time, safety, and the skills are probably the best of this bunch. Jordan Beck, I don't know. Like, the projection looks great. .251 batting average, 17 homers, 16 steals. That looks great on paper. I don't know if Jordan Beck's ready to take that step. Adelis Garcia and Santander, like, those dudes could be DFA'd by, probably not Santander given a contract, but you know what I mean. Like, there is a lot of risk in those two guys. Cowser, I know you like Cowser, but like, to my other point about all these batting average anchors late in the draft, that just kill your batting average. Cowser is yet another one of those. So not really a group I'm all that enamored with.
Well, to be fair, 2 seasons ago before Cowser got hurt, he at .242. So he's not completely.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Well, I'm just saying, like, better than .226. Like, league average is close to .250. Like, he's not destroying you if he's hitting .242.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I got you. Right.
And at least he's got power and speed. I'm like, Santander's got no speed. At least who knows what he has anymore. I like Jordan Beck, and I understand the concerns with Jordan Beck, but like the projection .251, 17 and 16, like last year in 148 games, 16 homers, 19 steals, .258. Like that he basically did that last year throughout the minors. He's been a power and speed guy with good batting average. I like to see the counting stats go better, but that's the whole thing with the Rockies in general. They just suck. But when you're looking at your fourth outfield, again, he's young. He's 24 years old right now. If you can get Britton Doyle starting to swing it well, you have Beck in that lineup. You have Goodman in that lineup. Like, there's pieces there. We're talking ADP 233. Like, it's just finally getting far enough back where you can take some chances and see where the dust settles. And I think Jordan Beck, like, if you want to take an early outfield five, I think it's a phenomenal pick to take Jordan Beck and see what you can get. Don't hate him as an outfield four if you're playing with fire. But I think there is a lot to like. Like, I think this time next year, he could be sitting in that Brenton Doyle, Lawrence Butler discussion area, just with the skill set he has.
Yeah, and the age, pedigree, age 25 season. Yeah. You gotta. I don't want to say bank on a step forward, but you at least have to entertain the possibility that Jordan Beck could take a big step forward. I worry about the swing and miss. I worry about how, like, truly horrendous Jordan Beck was on the road last year. Like, this is kind of a platoon bat, not left, yeah, right, but home away. Yep. So, but I don't know, 233, I guess it's fine. Santander's one who scares me. Like, you can make the case that Santander just last year was a total wash. This is a 40 home run type power bat that you're getting at 230. What if, like, I'm not totally convinced the shoulder is, like, all good. And so, I don't know. For as bad as Santander was last year, like, I don't know. It seems like the type of profile I'd normally be in on, like, a rebound old, injured old.
Yeah, that is you, yes.
Like, bum shoulder, but I don't know. Something just doesn't sit right when I pull up Anthony Santander in the draft room.
Yep. So real quick, before we go to listener questions, just for, we'll review the position, but just for listeners, left side of the board, 31 through 45, we liked about 75% of the board. Right side of the board, 46 through 60, I think we liked like three or four people.
Yeah, like I'd say Lyle at 202. I'll give you Ramos, 218.
Cags.
Half of Laureano, Cags, Willier, maybe half Beck. Of Beck. That's it. Yeah. Kowser, yeah, maybe. So maybe five or six.
Yeah.
So again, kind of reinforces, I don't want to sound like a broken record here, but reinforces kind of my general approach to this group that I laid out at the top.
Yep. Get in, get out quickly. All right. Some Discord questions for you before we head out of here. Sean Shard says, which will be closer for Doyle's 2026 stat line, is 24 or is 25? I'm going 24.
I'm going Brenton Doyle's 2024 stat line. We'll be closer to that in 2026.
Agreed. Steve Stoughton says, which two outfielders are you targeting on this Bloom board at ADP, and which two are you fading?
I would say my favorite two are Jacob Marcy. I'll give you three, Steve, since you're such a good dude. Jacob Marcy, Brenton Doyle, and Jurickson Profar at picks 148, 165, and 182, respectively.
I'll go Nemo at 153. I'll go Doyle also at 165. I can't give it all to you. Then I'll go Dalen Lyle at 202. I like that one quite a bit. Who are two fades? Like, we have quite a few of them, actually.
Yeah, there's about 10 fades on the right side of the board here.
Someone not named Chandler Simpson.
In terms of relatively expensive fades, I would go Chandler Simpson, Dominguez.
Dominguez for sure, yeah. I gather's Trout. Okay, it's got a list on the other side. You can pick your battle. All right, BP says Jordan Beck. What's more likely, he improves on last year, or he gets sent to the minors? I think everyone thinks he was really bad. 16-19, 250 something is not bad.
Yeah, no, I myself included. Like, actually, you've opened my eyes here. Bad. Yep. I know. Yeah.
So like, he improves. Like, I take what he did right there at 233. Right,
but he
now
did get sent to the minors last year.
Earlier in the season, then they brought him up and he played, yes, the rest of the year. Like,
yes,
I think it's his year to sink or swim. Like, they stuck with Doyle all last year, maybe because they understood the situation also. But I think if anything, he improves. I don't think he gets into the minors, let's put it that way.
Okay.
Market 8 says, more of a general question, but how are you drafting outfield in five outfielder leagues? Two in the top 30, two to three here.
Yeah, I ideally you'd have four by 200, and then I will release it, especially in fab leagues, and just take a late outfielder or two and try and stream that through fab. But ideally I'd want to get my four by pick 200.
Canton Dog says, Andy Páez, could Páez be in a split role later this season if his splits between home and away don't improve for 2025? I don't think so, but the Dodgers have so much depth, nothing would shock me.
Yeah, I mean, especially
after they sign Bellinger, they might just have to DFA Andy Páez.
He said after they signed Bellinger?
Yeah.
Okay. Like, that didn't actually happen tonight? Because he is down to like two teams as we, or three teams as we.
Yeah, it's record. It's the Mets, the Yankee, and two other teams.
Two other teams. The Blue Jays and the freaking Dodgers.
I quoted the tweet. I said Dodgers and dot dot dot. Never mind. We know how this show ends.
That's pretty good. That's the double-edged sword of having such a great lineup is, you know. But the thing is, the Dodgers aren't that deep of a lineup. Like, who are they going to replace Páez with? And Dodgers are probably winning the NL West. Like, they probably have a long leash on Andy Páez. And I don't think teams really bench guys based on home away splits. I wouldn't worry about that either.
No, I wouldn't worry about it. We kind of made the joke the other night when they were moving pieces around. I said, when they're blowing teams out, they're going to bench the olds. Páez is playing. Like, they need to keep him out there.
Half joking. I mean, it's real.
But. Like, there's legitimacy, like, that he put the home road splits in here. Like, I get it, but he's also young. Like, they want to play him. I don't see why they wouldn't keep. They played him in the postseason when he sucked. Like, they're going to keep playing him. Yep. Martin Sokolsky says, which number is higher in 2026, Chandler Simpson's MLB steals total or games played in the minors? P.S. The answer is his games played in the minors.
You're not supposed to answer your own question, Sokolsky. What are we doing?
But, I agree with you. Yeah, I agree. I agree as well. Like, he can't play defense. Martin's been a big pundit to that, and I fully endorse that statement.
So follow up to Martin's. If you had to pick one of Chandler Simpson or Jose Caballero at cost, Simpson is at 173 ADP and Caballero at 222. Who are you going with?
I'll go Caballero. He at least plays shortstop probably for 2 months, and I can figure it out from there.
And who knows, 2 months into the season, once Volpe's back, someone else is going to be hurt, and Caballero is flexible defensively to actually carve out a somewhat regular role. You're not getting batting average, not getting homers, but you could get. Yeah, I agree. Caballero over Chandler Simpson, probably even straight up.
Yep. It's neither, but yes, I would take Caballero. Right. TDK, could Profar 2020 260. I like the potential value in that group. I think we both like him. I don't know if he got 20 steals still in him, but I like the rest. Yeah.
2022. Oh yeah, 260 for Profar. Yeah, I agree. I don't know about 20 bags, but I actually expect 260 and 20 plus for Profar.
I agree. And 20 steals would be gravy, but I'll take the 20 homers and like 10 steals.
Yep.
And hit 260. Do that. Yep. Smokey Joe says lack of steals post Chandler Simpson jumps out, except for the two Yankees and their at bats are somewhat in question. Talking about Dominguez and Caballero. If you went power heavy outfielders for the first two outfielders, any player in this range post Simpson that you are targeting for steals? Oh yeah, you got Dalen Lyle, Jordan Beck. Like, if you wanted to believe in Sal Frelick, if you went power heavy, you don't need the power. He actually fits that mold. But yeah, Beck and Lyle would be.
I think Beck's your answer. The thing for me with Lyle, and it's a tiny sample, who knows? Washington loves to run, but Lyle was only, I think, 8-for-14 in stolen base attempts last year. That is pretty horrendous. If that continues, I don't know if that light will stay green, but also it's just 14 bags. Like, I wouldn't expect him to be that bad again, given the raw speed.
Brendan says, does Caballero smash his play appearance projections? Let's see
what are his
projections. I'm pulling them up right now.
Because I don't have them up. I always wrestle with putting plate appearance projections
projection system would you like me to tell you?
Not Steamer.
Okay. Oopsies 315, BadX 313, ATC has 362. They're way high on them, but most of them are at 315-ish.
Yeah, I'd guess around 350, something like that.
And last year he was at 370, year before 483.
So, I mean, just by starting the first month and a half, you're getting
go over for sure.
Yeah, you're getting like 120 banked in, and I'd say about 350.
Yes, sure. Adam W. says, who's the Mets opening day left fielder, and will he have signed by the time you record this tonight? Lou Bob is in the outfield, everybody, so that has moved things around.
Well, probably at center, though. The left fielder might be someone who rhymes with Rhodey Lellinger.
Yeah, hopefully, but if not, Benj seems to be like the guy that might get the shot as well. So, might platoon with Tyrone Taylor.
I love Tyrone. Yeah. I don't know why, but I love Tyrone Taylor.
Yeah, I don't know why either. He's literally the most basic platoon guy you can find. But yes.
Probably. I mean, I know why, because it sounds like Tyrod Taylor, who's my favorite.
You drink milk when you get up in the morning, too? Jesus Christ. Jeff Ace. I'm just joking. I tell people I have a filter every once in a while. It's things slip out.
Hour 14 and True Colors come out.
Yeah.
Might listen to the end, folks.
Yeah, stay all the way to the end. Jeff A says Frelick was 84th ranked player last year, CBS 5x5. Seems like if he gets close to that again, he's a steal here. Curious to hear your thoughts on him.
Yeah, I did not realize he was that high in the CBS ranks.
Batting average and steals probably got a boost.
Yeah, and even some pop. So, no, I mean, I talked about Frelick earlier. I think there's risk of not only playing time, but there's some rabbit risk here. I don't think he's a double-digit home run guy, and such a wet noodle with the bat that even though he makes a ton of contact, I don't know about 260 on the batting average front. And if that starts to fade, swing based opportunities start to fade, how useful are you in real life when there are other options in Milwaukee, et cetera, et cetera.
When Garrett Mitchell comes knocking on that door, it's going to be great.
Yeah.
You've drafted him.
I did. I do have some Garrett Mitchell this year.
You drafted him. So when you put him in your lineup one of these weeks, I can't wait to hear about that. Mailman Mike says, by the end of the list, how many outfielders do you ideally want on your team in a draft, 12 versus 15? We've hit on that quite a bit. At least four out of these two lists. At least four.
Yep.
Sean Chard says, if you consider Varsho's production per plate appearance plus stats from fill-ins when he is injured again, should he be ranked ranked or drafted higher than he is currently? It's actually funny and true and no.
I think it depends what you can get. All the projection systems have Varsho for like 580 plate appearances. Could happen, I guess. But yeah, that's the other thing with the batting average sink that Varsho is. Batting average is very hard to find in Fab too. So when Varsho gets hurt, you're trying to kind of neutralize what he doesn't do for you, and that's going to be hard to do in Fab.
Yep. Nico says, when drafting outfielder 5 or reserve outfielder, do you take into consideration that there will be ample replacements in Fab, thus placing less of an emphasis in filling? Yep, we've nailed that one already earlier in the show.
Yeah, great question, Nico. I mean, pretty much every week, without fail, there are multiple outfield streamer types for that week.
Like a buck or two.
Exactly. So I think it's completely fine to just kind of assume your last outfield starting spot even is a $1 player in an auction or one of your last round picks in a draft, because it is fungible. Now in a draft and hold, no, you need what, 11, 12 outfielders. You need that depth, but in Fab leagues, it's certainly replaceable.
Steve Brunn says, why do all the projection models have Dalen Lyle platooning and getting 500 at bats while playing 125 games? Washington is a lefty heavy lineup. Do you guys see him platooning? No, I do not.
Yeah. You hit on Lyle before. So, yep.
Yep. And I think no, we're good. It's just banter in the chat. All right, final thoughts of the position. We've said it probably multiple times on this, at least the 31 through 60. But final thoughts here.
Yeah, for as confused as I was when we were talking Lawrence Butler, I have found clarity as of 10:30 p.m. local. Yeah, just I don't know. Hate to say it one more time, but if you skip to the end. Just really, really like the multitude of options, different types of producers from outfield 31 to 45, ADP 140 to 200. I think that's a really nice sweet spot to ideally grab two outfielders and then say screw the rest of the 200 plus guys.
Yep, I agree. It's I'm really going to have to focus on making sure I dot my I's and cross my T's by about pick 200. In the outfield range, otherwise, like it could really make things go south in a hurry at different categories. It's really, really murky. At least like, again, this is why I'm really looking forward to doing our pockets of ADP, because we'll be able to incorporate what else is getting drafted in these ranges.
That's what I want to see is, yeah, from this two, I should not have said 200 plus range earlier to the 200 to 250. I would love to see a board right now of other positions and what's available 200 to 250.
Like what second baseman is out there, what corner infield, like things we'd rather take instead of these guys.
I know this was like the Mark, when we talked about on the second base show, this was the Marcus Semien, Brett Beatty before the Bo Bichette signing, a couple others that we liked at second base, for example. So
and there's also a pocket I think after 175 or something, like after maybe 200 of first base also, that we like for corner, at least for corner infield area. So yeah, it'll be good to swing back on that as well. But all right, that'll do it, folks. We'll be back with you guys Thursday evening. Remember, if you've listened this long and you are a paid Patreon member and you want in the listener league, you need to fill out the survey before Thursday's show. Otherwise, the wait list will take care of those spots, and we apologize, but they will be filled Friday. If everything works out, we will release the leagues via Patreon video. So keep track of that. If you want to check out the Baseball HQ draft prep subscription that goes from now until the end of April, use promo code BUBBA26, BUBBA26, for $10 off that subscription. And you can follow Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, Patreon, patreon.com/BubbaBloom. I'm at BD Entrick. This was Bubba and the Bloom episode 311. Catch you all next time.